Lord, we just thank you for this table, this space, this room, this conference that you have so helped to orchestrate. And Father, we just ask now that you would come and be in our midst. Lord, that we would just hear your voice speaking.
Lord, we just ask that you would just go before us. Thank you for this time. And Father, we just thank you for meeting us right where we're at. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, I thought we would just start by making some introductions. Lizzie and I are going to kind of tag team this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think it's really helpful that we just get to know each other a little bit, right? Instead of just presenting all this content without some kind of the backstory, the why, if you will. And so my name is Stephanie, and I started doing what we call City Gospel Movement work before I knew it had a name. And back when we were considering where my oldest daughter was going to go to elementary school. And we had so many people say, well, don't you want the best for her? And I was pretty sure at that time that my underperforming, under budget, literally falling down neighborhood school was not probably the best. But I had read Francis Chan's Crazy Love. Have you read this book? Well, if don't read it if you don't want your life to drastically change. This would be my recommendation, because there was something that was stirring in me, having read that book and a couple other things that were happening in my life, that I started to see people and my community the way I thought God was probably looking at them. Mm-hmm. And no longer were things about inside the church, but I was experiencing taking my faith outside of the church and finding that God was in those places. And so we decided to put our kids in public school, and I just said, Lord, you better not leave me there. Mm-hmm. And so, and come to find out, he was in that place. And he was not only in that place, he was in the community and gathering churches to come together around the schools in our area. And years of doing this kind of work, I started feeling really alone. Like, hey, where are all the other Christians that might think this is a really good idea? And because my faith had never been more alive. Like, I finally got it, that what this idea of having a faith and sharing it looked like. People were coming to Christ. I was having tons of kids at my house for Bible studies. And but I'm like, where is everybody? Like, the party is right here. And so about that time, a friend of mine had texted me the foreword of Kevin's book, Unlikely, is the story of the Portland story here, where he befriended Sam Adams, who was our openly gay mayor at the time, and all the work that they did in and around the festival and then for the last 10 years. And my friend in the text had said to me, this guy sounds like you. And I feel like I read that book in about 30 seconds, because you were, you know, I think very similar to evangelists, you often feel alone and like, why isn't everybody else thinking this way? And so when you find those people that are similar to you, you want more, you know, that place, that special place where you don't have to explain your why. They just get it. And so I then started being everywhere they were. I was like, I'll go to that meeting. I'll go to this meeting. Coffee? Yes. Can we go to coffee again? And then 2.5 years ago, we started our City Gospel Movement team at Palau in an effort to really kind of shepherd the responsibility that Kevin had created, because he had gone all over the world telling this story that resonated with so many people, that then they were contacting him. And eventually it just became too great of a task for one person. And so we've kind of birthed this division, if you will, at Palau. And so it's been really, really thrilling. And that is why I do this work. and at why it is a privilege and a blessing every single day. So that's my why. I'll let Lizzie introduce herself.
And yeah, so my name's Lizzie Burke, and I grew up in the Portland area, and I actually went to Multnomah University, which is a local Bible university, and I studied pastoral ministry. And it was really interesting because even going to Multnomah University, I knew that I wasn't really set on working inside of a church, but I knew that I loved Jesus, and I wasn't super passionate about like history or math or whatever, but I was like, okay, this could be a good foundation. So I ended up studying pastoral ministry or church leadership, and then right out of Multnomah, I got an internship with the Portland Leadership Foundation and was actually connected to Palau through that work because they placed their interns at local nonprofits. And when they heard that I was really passionate about the church, they said, well, Palau would be perfect for you. And so I interned there for a year, and it was really interesting because do you know that feeling when God really weaves all these different streams of passions in your life together, and you're like, this is tailor-made. Like, there's no way this could be anything but God tailoring this internship. Because I had prayed like a thought. It was not even like a, okay, God, make this happen. It's like, God, I think it would be so interesting if I could, you know, take a few years off of life, travel around the world, and see how different cultures do church. I think it would be really interesting. So then I do this internship, and I'm in the last 2.5 years, we've called 300 leaders trying to understand how they envision the church in their city. Mm. I'm like, God, you totally did that. I didn't even need to travel everywhere, you know? But the interesting thing for me, my passion comes from being a young person, even at a Bible university where people were studying church leadership and hearing a lot of the criticism and cynicism of my generation when it comes to the church. And God started stirring something in me. He's like, the only way that the church will change is if her people learn to associate with her, as her, recognize that they are the church. That's the only way she's really going to change and live into her full potential. So I was like, I will go to church even if I'm the only one sitting in the pew, you know? And I think when I started at Palau, I had ended my formal education at Multnomah studying church, but then I felt like I entered an entire new education at Palau because they reframe church not only as a local congregation that you pastor, but as the church of the city. And I heard this really in a more comprehensive way for the first time and thought, wow, that is why Paul wrote to the church of Philippi, the church of Rome. And it wasn't so that they could meet on a Sunday and have a little pep rally, but so that they could be empowered outside of these walls, engage in culturally relevant ways, and actually help change the culture of the city. And I thought, well, that is a compelling vision of church that I think my generation has not heard in a comprehensive way like I'm having the privilege to do now. I want to learn this so I can communicate it, live it, and invite other people into this. And so that's kind of where my passion comes from. I feel like God stirred a love for the church in me when I was at school because I never really questioned what the church was. But then now through my work at Palau, I'm realizing that especially in our really quickly changing culture, people more than ever need to understand what is the church. Because there are so many assumptions about what the church is and really bad taste in a lot of people's mouths, even people who are a part of the church, who don't want to associate with the church because of the louder voices. And so through the work that we get to do and the stories we get to hear from leaders, I feel like I get to see the best side of it. That just needs to be broadcasted more. Like, this is the church. These are the stories of people learning their community, being embedded in their community, and through the long term and relationships, really changing the community through word and deed. So that's where my passion comes from. Yeah.
So I was, you know, we were hoping that would just kind of give a sense that these aren't just jobs for us. Mm-hmm. Like, we are all in. Mm-hmm. And we believe in this work so much. And we also really believe in, like Lizzie was saying, you know, the church of the city is marketplace leaders and is the evangelists and is the pastors and the parachurch leaders. And you know, that idea, especially from the evangelists, that we need them in these places to help keep that balance of word and deed, And so that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today, is just kind of, you know, some of the findings and the things that we feel really passionate about, especially in this space of evangelism. So, but we'll start by kind of talking about what is... I'm curious, I'm going to ask you a question before we put that up. Yeah. What, when I say city gospel movement or gospel movement in a city, what are some things that conjure up in your mind, or how
is
would
that
you
even a term you've heard?
Yes. Or how would you describe it, or
I'd say yes, but not usually in a context of, well, we'll talk about it when we want to do change within our church. Like, we'll talk about, you know, creating a movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, knowing...
Within the church.
Yeah, within the church.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think about gospel movements, I do see more of a, you know, outside of just one organization.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times we'll talk about it as involving multiple parts of our local church.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're a bigger
mm-hmm.
church, we tend to err on the side of being siloed
mm-hmm.
within the church. So trying to cross those department barriers can be
mm-hmm.
a challenge. So a movement would be us all moving in the same direction together.
Mm-hmm.
So I would see it as yes, but haven't really seen much success going outside of
mm-hmm.
our local church to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's in theory, not in having participated in something.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
Not a lot of practical results of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I would add to that, when I think of a movement, and particularly a gospel movement,
mm-hmm.
you know, I see the city as the people that live there that care and love where they live.
Mm-hmm.
It's the missional people of God.
Mm-hmm.
But the gospel movement comes from the power of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's God and man working together in a transformative way
mm-hmm.
to bring the power of that message of salvation to that city
mm-hmm.
where lives are changed and where God's people just long for that,
mm-hmm.
long for a transformative city.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where man and God come together and there's a movement
mm.
that happens in a city.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And I guess I'd probably see it similarly. That's what I would like to think of, anyway, when I think of a city gospel movement. You know, unfortunately, I think a lot of times my paradigm really is, well, it's a crusade, you know, or
mm-hmm.
something like that, where you have a big event and you invite
kind of
people.
A time stamp.
Yeah, for a time period and
mm-hmm.
so on. And ideally, there's a little follow-up to people that express interest in Christ have opportunity to kind of follow up on that and maybe grow. But that's not really, I think that's not holistic, and I think really what God really desires within the cities is that the body of Christ actually have significant influence in the culture of the city, and we've abdicated too much space. We've allowed the right spirit, right-hearted people without the guidance of the Spirit to take the lead in trying to bring about programs that they believe will address the needs of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So issues of how you deal with homeless population, how you deal with people who are drug addicts, how you deal with various things, if those are man's programs, they're going to be flawed. If they're God's programs, they can bring hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fortunately, the church doesn't often really take, maybe we're too shy or too bashful or don't want to be, I don't know, whatever, for whatever reason. We don't take that as the challenge the Spirit is giving to us to bring about that change. And so we kind of try and fall in line then with whatever is the contemporary popular approach,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and try and live with the solutions that are really man solutions and bring a little bit of gospel to it,
mm-hmm.
you know. We really ought to be taking the lead in some things that can transform really the culture from the heart out.
Mm-hmm.
And we often aren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll be excited to share with you some people who are there.
Good.
Who are doing exactly what you're talking about,
that's
taking
where
the
it
lead.
Needs to be.
Yeah. So we've put a lot of thought and time and effort into kind of crafting some language, because this, if you have 10 people around a table, you'll get 10 different mm-hmm. answers, right? And mm-hmm. it could even be people who work in the space. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of trying to create and craft some language that feels like we can all come around. So the way that we define a gospel movement is a unified, holistic, and sustainable effort of the citywide church to seek the prosperity, peace and prosperity of their city. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of camp on those three words, unity, holistic, mm-hmm. and sustainable. And the idea of unity, after, like Lizzie mentioned, we've had over 300 calls with leaders around the world. And one of the things that we can 100% say is necessary is like what you were describing, is this idea of a unified church in the city. Does not have to be everybody. We're never going to get every. If we strive for that, we will miss it every time. But that there is some kind of bedrock of unity amongst pastors, marketplace leaders, parachurch organizations that can kind of help create this foundation to a movement in a city. So we know that that is really critical. Holistic. It has got to be about word and deed. If we tip the scales too much, then we're off balance. And so, one of the things that we'll talk about later is kind of this tendency to slide over into serving with an assumption that people are going to share their faith. And that typically doesn't happen. Kevin has this famous saying around the office, like, when they were doing all this work with schools, and the superintendent said, people can't share their faith. And he's like, don't worry. Like, we can't pay them to share their faith. You know, like, this is not coming naturally out of people. So, it's that kind of, how do we help keep that balance of infusing the gospel, the why? Mm-hmm. Why are we all doing this? Every single leader we talk to has a very similar why. They felt a call in their life, they started to see things differently, and they want people to encounter Jesus. And no different than any evangelist out there, mm-hmm. right? And so, and then sustainable, that it cannot be on one church can't hold the whole thing up, one person can't hold the whole thing up. It has got to be something that we literally, we dream about this, that in 10, 20, 30 years, that this is such a norm in cities, mm-hmm. that we wouldn't have to explain this or have this conversation. What do you think this is? It would just be like, oh yeah,
this is the way we do it.
Mm-hmm. And so we have big, if you've ever read Good to Great, big BHAGs, big hairy audacious goals. Of just like, that's what we're going for. But that's because it's sustainable. That's because it is passed down from generation to mm-hmm. generation. And as one generation leaves, they're building into the next generation. And so those are kind of the three main pillars that we camp on. Inside of those are three areas of focus that we feel are really critical to a successful city movement. And that is prayer, service, and evangelism. If we have those three things, then again, if we look at this diagram and you see that kind of sweet spot in the middle, mm-hmm. That is the, like, look out if this is happening in your city, because Jesus is coming. But that idea of keeping those three things in very harmonious consistency with each other, certainly cities won't always have all of those three things. Oftentimes it is leader dependent, but all of these calls and research that we've done, we know for a fact that when these three things are happening in a city, there is great movement going on. And so today we're going to kind of camp on the evangelism piece and share with you some of the research and things that we've done. But back to our, so that's a city gospel movement the way we define it. and the way that we have kind of come to understand it after 2.5 years. And again, you know, if you look at PLOW as a 50-plus-year-old organization, we are like the new kids on the block. Like, I always say, I have a technology and fundraising background, or not fundraising, startup background, where you have to do a lot of fundraising. So this is my first time into a faith-based nonprofit. But Kevin is really letting us function very much like a startup. And it's really fun. We're getting to try things and do things. But we are very, and relative to everything else at PLOW, we're the newbies. But we do have kind of our main theme of why we do the work that we're doing for those that are the boots on the ground in the cities. Is because we want to help celebrate and accelerate gospel work around the world. And those two words, celebrate and accelerate, drive everything we do. And so a little more than a year and a half ago, we launched our website, citygospelmovements.org, where we try and do just that. We know that people resonate with story. And so we learned very early on, if I can show what is possible, then it might start kind of, you know, intriguing people to take that next step. And so so storytelling, what's happening in cities. And this is what would happen with Kevin. And, you know, when we first started our project for the website, we're like, we just need Kevin and a website. Because what's happening is he goes and talks and gets people excited about what might be possible in their city, and then they want to tell the story, so the only person they know to tell it to is Kevin, and then he tries and tells it to, you know, 4 or 5 other people, and this was going on. And so we're like, hey, let's try and elevate that a little bit, and let's try and create a platform that we can really kind of, with a bigger megaphone, share these stories of what's happening in cities. And it is so encouraging. You're like, it's like the antidote to any news agency, right? Because that feels terrible. And every time we hear these incredible things that people are doing, you're like, oh my gosh, this is, Jesus is at work in places that you thought were dead, right? So that has been super thrilling. And we also want to just say, we see you. Like, we see this work. We know it's hard. We know that oftentimes you think you're crazy because nobody else is really wanting to engage, right? It takes time and effort to build these relationships, to build trust. And so a lot of what we really try and do is just be a champion to people who are doing this kind of work and just say, we see you. We convene leaders and get them together. It's a big piece of our accelerating. So how can we then help push these movements further down the field? It's convening leaders, bringing them together, sharing best practices. We started a coaching program that is helping to come alongside people who are just getting started in this space, or even people who have been doing it for a while and have specific questions like, oh gosh, who's handled this before? There's a leader in Arizona, Tracy Beal, and she runs an organization called School Connect, and it's a program that helps engage schools and churches and nonprofits in the community. And it's been super successful and one of the best models that we've seen out there. And we have introduced her to so many people now that she's almost constantly traveling. In fact, she's, because we've introduced her to people out in at Harvard who are trying to kind of, there's a gentleman out there who's a believer, also runs the graduate program in education for Harvard. And he is having her be one of the main speakers at this event that he's doing. It's just, you know, it's super fun. It's like, oh my gosh, you need to talk to so-and-so, and you need to talk to so-and-so. And so that's a big piece of how we help accelerate this gospel work. So that's kind of a bit about our team and what we're doing. We do podcasts and lots of writing, trying to network and coordinate with other organizations that are kind of running in some of these same lanes, with the main goal that if more people know and have eyes to see how this could work, then more people will engage. and then it just becomes easier. Mm-hmm. Like that's the end game. Is just this steep on ramp right now will start leveling out a little bit. Is the goal. So Lizzie's going to kind of just share a little bit of our agenda today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes it helps to be clear about our agenda from the beginning, to say, this is what we want you to get out of this, you know? And you can see up here, the first is really to convince you of the significance of collaboration. Whether you are already a collaborator and have been at it for a while, sometimes it just does get discouraging and you need to be reminded that. I had a conversation with York Moore earlier this morning, who was saying, oftentimes we think partnerships are supposed to be easy. You partner with people and they agree the same things, and if it gets hard, then you shouldn't be a partner anymore. But partners, good partners and collaborators are able to talk through those hard things and be stronger partners because of it. And so maybe it's just reframing the idea of what collaboration is, or just even invite you to widen your lens of, you know, maybe I thought it was just getting people to collaborate in this little context. What would it look like to then empower the people who have been collaborating to empower other people to collaborate? And I think that really is the kind of the bread and butter of what the leaders in this space do. They want to work with other people. They don't want to do it alone, and they don't want to have their name put on things. They want to find the right people, the right teammates, and then allow them to thrive in their own areas of expertise for the sake of the city. And then finally, motivate you to connect with local leaders. And I know that, you know, we have the three of you amazing people here, but even in the room that we were just in with the plenary session, a lot of the times travel schedules just allow you to get in, get out, do the event, leave. And we have found that when you connect with local leaders who are on the ground, your ministry expands. And I know you have seen that hugely with Stonecroft too. But the other thing is, when we talk to local leaders who, and we'll get into this more later, but when we talk to local leaders who describe their receptivity to outside voices, they say, we will welcome outside experts if they model these postures. And so we'll get into those later. But we find it's kind of two-sided. It's one, just getting in the minds of leaders who are going into different cities, hey, have you connected with those who are already there? Do you know who they are? We would love to connect you because they want to meet you. And then also talking to those who are going in and saying, hey, these local leaders have expressed these postures as significant to whether you will be welcome. So how can we encourage both sides to go about these partnerships and collaborations most effectively? So we've shared a little bit about ourselves, but and got to meet a little bit beforehand. But I think a key thing, just so we can all be on the same page, just say your name, maybe what city you're from, and then why you chose to come to this breakout, just maybe in a sentence or two out of all the other ones. What's been stirring in your life? Did it just sound random? So you're like, I'm deciding to go to that one. What kind of provoked you? I'm gonna go to this breakout. So, Steve, can we start with you?
Sure. Steve Cole. I'm from Colorado Springs, actually. But we've lived there for about 7 years. And I guess the reason I was interested in this one is I'm an engineer by training and worked as an engineer for 30 years. I like data. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to see what kind of things you are working with, mm-hmm. that kind of help us to move more effectively toward the future.
That's good. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm Dory Thompson. I live in Laguna Hills, Orange County, down in Southern California.
Laguna. I didn't know you lived in Laguna. Oh, next time I'm there, I'm calling
you. Yeah, you come to us. I actually live in the Hawthorne District in Portland.
No way. So, from one cool place to another. My goodness.
So my husband is a pastor, and now he's a chaplain. But what has just really captured my attention is that I really believe your mission field is where you live, mm-hmm. you know, the city block, yes. in your neighborhood, and where God has planted you. And God has planted us in rural and in urban, just different, you know, socioeconomic, political viewpoints. You know, we have experienced mm-hmm. that type of diversity, and it's made us richer, being able to live in different places. And so when we moved to Laguna Hills, my husband was transitioning from being a pastor at a local church to being a chaplain in a hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was it was very, it just changed everything, you know, in terms of how we were in ministry. And we were also going back, we were going to a town where we really didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. We knew, in, you know, 20, 30 minutes away. But, and so it was very important to us that we got involved in the local church. Mm-hmm. But we haven't been able to see an acceleration of the gospel in that. And I feel as being part of a local church, there's a responsibility that we have in that, but also just trying to own that more, and because it's a transitionary place that we are at as a couple and as Jesus followers. I think the other part is just, you know, that our ministry got connected with Lewis Plow and the City Gospel Movement, and one of our staff members actually decided just to jump in and get engaged, mm-hmm. and it has been transformative for her, but it's also been transformative for those that she has brought with her. Mm-hmm. And now we are seeing how, where she lives in Tyler, Texas, and that's where City Fest is going on, but now she's kind of taking some of those concepts and doing it in Dallas-Fort Worth, and it's been just really fun to see. It's what she gained, and now she is moving forward in a new context. And so for me, it was about, you know, what can I learn here that for myself personally, but I'm then also as a ministry from, you know, people that want to take the gospel out to places where they live.
Yeah,
so
that's great.
I love that.
I do too.
Yeah.
Right, Mark.
Mark Began. I'm a family pastor, former middle school pastor for basically the last 25 years at Rolling Hills Community Church in the south part of Portland, Tualatin. And I think there's a couple things you mentioned that are kind of catalysts for why I came. One of them is to learn leadership of a gospel movement. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very important to me. But when you mention Kevin saying, you know, we don't have to worry about people speaking up about the gospel, I feel like I'm one of those people that has tried to break out of the church world and get into
the community.
Mm-hmm. So I serve with this organization that's trying to lower drug and alcohol use with youth in Tualatin. It's got a drug-free community grant from the government, and I'm on the board there and stuff like that because I wanted to build relationships with people outside, and so I get to know people in the city leadership and county leadership, local parents, you know, that care. And it's not a spiritual thing. I mean, it is in a holistic sense, but not in a it's not a Christian organization.
Right.
So I'm in there. But the spoken part of, I think this is where I want to lead gospel movements, but I don't feel like I'm leading the way by example. So being a leader, I feel like, is influence, but if you can't, again, model where you want people to go because you've been there yourself, I just feel like that's partly because I've been in the church for so long, it's hard to break out of the church mode of you're always around people at church, so it seems like the only people that you're leading to Christ are people that have grown up in the church that maybe have never, you know, made a decision yet, but they're not the kind of people, or, you know, they're coming from other churches and you maybe are baptizing them or doing other things like that, but you're not seeing them actually make decisions and helping follow up their decision. You're seeing it kind of be disconnected. So that is a big part of why I came, because I want to learn how to be a better gospel movement leader in our family ministry in particular, and then also to I'm trying to overcome kind of the guilt of feeling like I'm not cutting it. You know, as a, like, unless I'm, and this is, I know it's not right because it's a spiritual work, but there's just that deep gnawing feeling that if I haven't led someone to Christ, I'm failing. And, you know, it starts with sharing, you know, so not having shared either is also a frustration. to that end, but also to not see someone come to faith is, even though it's totally a heartbeat of mine, and I want to see that happen.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I think that, you know, just as much as we, and feel free to get water too, or we can bring it over here if you want.
Does anybody want water?
I'm good.
You want some?
Yeah.
You know, but when we share, kind of know where we're coming from, you know, it just like, okay, now we're going in, right? Like, it diffuses all of the posturing and positioning, and so I really appreciate you doing that. You know, one thing that is we've done a lot of research in the last year around evangelism, sharing your faith, specific to city gospel movements. What are some things, a question that we're curious about is, what are two things you look for in partners in evangelism? So, what are two things you look for in partners in evangelism?
So it's a kind of different context too, like in a church setting, an organization setting.
In just, you know, how you're thinking about the city, you know, just qualities of partnering really could even just be a higher level question and could potentially take it out of the evangelism space. But just in partnering, what feels good when you partner with someone and it goes well?
I have a tough time putting that in terms of evangelism, because I don't really see myself as evangelist. But in terms of what we do to accomplish what we believe is God's purpose for why we happen to be together.
Yeah.
Obviously, a common desire to do something that addresses a situation we both see needing to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then also, really, the common foundation of Christ as being the center of our life. You know, so I guess I'd use those two things.
So a common vision. We want to solve this problem.
Yeah, having the same, seeing a situation and seeing it similarly and trying to find a way to solve that, address that issue.
Yeah.
In terms of human things especially.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's really interesting, I think, how God brings people together for that.
You know, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much you want me to. I can talk for hours.
No, that's good. That's good.
I don't want to get carried away. But
lucky Colorado Springs.
Well, my main focus though actually is more in Burma, so it's there's
slightly different than Colorado Springs.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Northern Burma in particular, mostly Christians. The government is run by Buddhists, and the military is not very friendly to non-Buddhists. And conflict has been active for the last 8 years. Not high level, but oppressive and actual fighting. It's displaced a lot of people. Most people are villagers that have been farmers. And they're in IDP camps then. And the fathers especially don't have a place to farm. They don't have a way to raise, you know, food and crops and things to take care of the family and do something to take care of that. I begin to recognize the potential for agricultural training to be a situation that might help address that. A year ago when I was there, I was introduced by a friend to another guy who has quite a lot of land that's close to the city that is good agricultural land. And when I was introduced to him, he started talking about his desire to do something to help these farmers.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but the thing I don't have is I don't know people that know how to do that, you know. Well, as it turns out, I had already been talking with some people that are agricultural experts at universities and different places, and I said, well, I think I might have some ideas for how to help. And it's developed into something that is going to, I believe we're going to get started with the agricultural training program there with the help of some other people from Thailand and other places. So the point is that
if you have that common desire mm-hmm. that you believe is really driven by the Spirit
yep.
to do something to benefit other people
mm-hmm.
who can't do it for themselves, especially
mm-hmm.
if you have that vision, you know, to do something like that, and you have the Spirit is prompting you to do that without any desire to benefit yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spend my own money to go there usually,
mm-hmm.
so it's not
wow.
not. I'm not making any money on this. It's,
right.
It goes the other way. But the point is it's a compulsion of the Spirit
yeah.
to do something.
Yeah, I think what you're saying also is that there's a deep conviction.
Yeah.
So like when you're looking for a partner, it's not just that you're focusing on the same problem, but that you have a conviction you want to see it through, even if it's hard, you know?
Yeah.
So
and you also want to be, you want to be open to other possibilities of
mm-hmm.
where this might take you.
Mm, that's
okay.
good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes the church is afraid of the dark,
mm.
you know, and I think we should not be.
Mm-hmm.
The same guy that has the land also asked me what I knew about mining. And the mining industry is probably one of the more corrupt and evil places, and I first thought that is just not where I'm.
Mm.
I don't want to be there. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized the light needs to get to the darkest places.
Wow.
Even though I don't have a clue about anything about mining,
yeah.
I know some people who do. So, you know,
yeah.
maybe we've got to let the Spirit take us to places we're uncomfortable going. And
that's beautifully said.
And then let Him provide the connections and the resources that bring that
yeah.
up.
That's
it's
good.
Really all about redemption. You know, redemption of people, redemption of what God has created and put us in, He's given us this mandate, right,
mm-hmm.
to steward His earth
mm-hmm.
and the people in it. So how do we then, together with others that we collaborate with, how do we see these things that need the light
mm-hmm.
and have the courage then
yeah.
to move forward, realizing that we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an agriculture guy, right? I'm an engineer. So I worked in the aerospace industry forever, and so I didn't really do any
mm-hmm.
farming. But that's what the need is. And
yeah.
the people who have the resources and knowledge and expertise, and they want to be part of it. You know? And
that's
so
good. Yeah. Yeah.
Stepping into
yep.
that with people that God presents to you, it's amazing what some of the
yeah.
connections have become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's unexplainable. It's like you were talking about, Lizzie. Yeah. It can only be God at work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's no way I could have ever conceived of all this.
Yeah. Yeah. Doris, Mark, do you guys have ideas of what you look for in a partner?
I think there's some partnerships that they're transactional,
mm-hmm.
you know, where it's mutually beneficial to mm-hmm. advance the kingdom through putting two organizations together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's the other one, and I would also, because I think these are so much more joyful and
mm.
Transformative, is when it is a natural work of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you just a really quick example of last year when we went to Amplify,
mm-hmm.
right? And I went to a workshop, and there was someone from InterVarsity that was speaking,
mm.
and the Lord just spoke to my cut right to the heart. And I knew what I needed to, you know, I knew what I needed to do. And this was happening at the same time as our board of directors was looking at the ends of our ministry, you know, in terms of why do we exist, what are the policies, et cetera. And the two kind of collided, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was going through both of them at the same time. And I knew at that point that I needed to go further with this person that was
mm-hmm.
leading this workshop. And that was a year ago. Since that time, now there's, you know, he is this leader is actually coaching us and consulting. I'm consulting with this, and it has it will be transformative for the ministry, because
mm-hmm.
we're looking at going from an attractional model to more of a missional model within
mm-hmm.
the ministry. And it's just been so exciting to see, you know, our field staff, you know, just experiencing a life of evangelism in a new way, in personal
mm-hmm.
evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was something that happened really more naturally.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a pursuit of anything. It was God convicting and getting the heart for two organizations to come together, mm-hmm. and recognizing also your gaps. I think that's really important, is to be aware of what if you had this, you could take the kingdom yeah. work mm-hmm. further. Mm-hmm. And I think that's being able to figure out what those gaps are and being yeah. able to see how 1 + 1 could equal 3.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not saying you have the gaps, so you need to work on that. It's like mm-hmm. you have the gap, so find somebody who can fill it. You know, it's like, yeah. And then you have a new relationship yep. that you didn't have before, which mm-hmm. is the primary motivator mm-hmm. when we ask people, like, what's the best thing that you've gotten because you now do this collaborative work? They're like, yep. friendships, new yeah. friendships.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Mark, do you have anything to add?
Yeah. One is the ability to think big picture and like individual organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if we can be common with the big picture point of view, mm-hmm. but then also understand our role, very similar, kind of our role and how we fit mm-hmm. in what we're going after.
Yeah.
And then the thing, like, I wouldn't want is a lot of overlap. Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of times,
doubling down.
That's what happens with churches. We're all going after kind of the same things. Mm-hmm. And so churches that cross multiple communities sometimes are going after the same things mm-hmm. in the same community.
Yeah.
And it becomes a challenge
yeah.
within that. So, you know, it's hard to, because I still, when I think of common, you know, I was thinking common, you know, methodology. Mm-hmm. Usually when there's radically different methodologies between partners, it's really hard to work together, mm-hmm. you know. But when you have really complementary, mm-hmm. You know, term methodologies, it's a lot easier to partner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to be complementary and not overlapping. I mean, you know,
yeah.
it's
a dance, yeah.
So that's what's hard and also what I would look for.
Yeah.
Well, let's share a few things that we have found over the last 2.5 years of talking with leaders and seeing successful movements happen. They oftentimes will have these consistent threads to them. First and foremost, it's like what you're saying, it's kingdom-minded. Mm-hmm. It's not about transactional, I get, you get. It's about, we're part of something bigger here, mm-hmm. and the Spirit is leading us. And it's with and through and for the local church. Oftentimes, when we don't engage the local church, we will suffer. Mm-hmm. But it's that idea of coming into that unity piece and saying, we're going to just come through this platform, not on top of it, not around it, right, but through it. Committed for the long haul. Like the idea that we are, this is, I think your point, Doris, about that transaction is that it can be a very short-term thinking. And creating environments and partnerships that have a longer-term presence. Respected conveners, these are critical people in cities.
Mm-hmm. Influential.
So critical. And they have this incredible ability, Kevin is one of those people, to be such a neutral convener. And that neutrality gains the respect and trust.
Mm-hmm.
Able to speak language of multiple sectors of society. They're not leaving people out. We're engaging marketplace. We're engaging the parachurch, the nonprofits. Risk taker. These are our people. Like, you're going to Burma. I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, but you are a risk taker. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're starting to taste it. Like, oh my gosh, we could do something here. And you're willing to put your own money into something because you're starting to believe what could happen. And that is such a consistent characteristic of people that do this kind of work. They're inherently, they believe that God has called them to this, and through Jesus, we can change this place. And again, it just gets all back to believes that city transformation is possible and that Jesus is already at work in that place. He's yelling at us to join him. So I think we can probably skip over Andrew's video. And maybe, Kaden, what's our time here? Okay.
Yeah, I think let's just jump to the Portland story and that we can get to the data.
So too. So just to kind of transition, you know, one of the things that over the last 10, 11 years, so the whole Portland story was hinged on this big festival that they did in Portland. And then out of that came this, you know, all these grand ideas of meeting with the mayor and school church partnerships, foster care initiatives, and refugee care initiatives. The last 10 years, it's just been beautiful. Lots of unity amongst pastors and things like that. So about 2 years ago, a group of leaders that were kind of on the front end of that movement went for a retreat to kind of look back and go, okay, what's been working well, and where are some areas that were lacking or need to put some more effort and emphasis. And so, you know, again, they're like, great, we're doing fantastic job on pastoral unity, doing efforts of dinners and lunches and building into pastors around the city and keeping track of who's doing what. Refugee care, school partnerships, foster care were all going well, but to our surprise, to Kevin's surprise, what the group decided that wasn't going well was our people engaging in faith conversations. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing people come to Christ? We're doing all these amazing things, mm-hmm. but we're not seeing this growth over here. Mm-hmm. And so it was a real aha moment for everybody in the room to kind of go, uh-oh, we didn't take our hands all the way off the wheel, but we've got to get them back at 10 and 2. Mm-hmm. And so that really caused us to start thinking, okay, so if this is happening in Portland, mm-hmm. where the Luis Palau Association mm-hmm. is, right, is that happening in other cities? Mm-hmm. And so that really challenged us to kind of start thinking about, you know, how to gain some of that data mm-hmm. And see if we were an anomaly or if this was, mm-hmm. you know, most likely the case in a lot of cities. So Lizzie will kind of explain how we kind of embarked on that little journey.
So when we realized that evangelism momentum was waning since mm-hmm. the 2008 festival, we started to do some research. So you can see the City Gospel Movement team formed 2016. And for a while, we were doing a lot of calls just to understand who are the types of leaders in this space. And that the characteristics you saw, kingdom-minded, with room for the local church, a lot of those calls revolved around talking to people like that. Then they had the retreat with the Portland leaders, and they realized, okay, evangelism wake-up call. We need to put energy, resources, momentum, prayer towards this because we've been putting the same strategy towards prayer and service. Like if you think of the Venn diagram, prayer and service running and gunning. Evangelism was atrophying. And so what we did was we did a focus area survey we sent it to about 270 City Gospel Movement leaders. So they were parachurch leaders. They're also pastors, kind of a variety, some marketplace. And we got 77 responses. And at the end of the survey, we were really focusing on, you know, what areas of these 18 focus areas do you want support? There was church unity, there was volunteerism, there was the market, like the faith and work conversation, there was evangelism among many, foster care. And the second out of 18 where they said, we really want support, is in evangelism. And we're like, okay, well, in Portland, we know this is a really big need. Their desire is there, but the how to implement and really elevate and accelerate this, there's a big question mark around that. So then we did a little bit of a deeper dive and said, you know what, we're going to focus on the U.S. domestically, but this summer we're going to have summer interns and we are going to call 19 different cities around the U.S. to really get a pulse on the landscape of evangelism in the city. So we asked questions like, do you hear people talking about evangelism in your city? And again, these are the network leaders. So they're connected to the ministerial alliances, the pastors' prayer groups, the marketplace of faith and work conversations. So they're connected. So they have a good sense of what's happening around the city. And we asked, do you hear evangelism being talked about? If so, why or why not? And then we ask them, you know, do you see, what sort of citywide collaboration do you see around evangelism? Or what kind of evangelism activity are you aware of in the last few years? So we're really asking these questions. What's your pulse on the city? And it's interesting, some of the themes we were hearing is evangelism is thought of as a church-centric or congregation-centric activity. So when it comes to thinking more widely about evangelism, people don't necessarily think, how could we collaborate with other churches to evangelism trainings? It's, we may do an evangelism training once in a while, but oftentimes there was, oh, we don't really do that. Or this one church did a specific event and we heard about it. I think a couple people went to it, but we didn't necessarily work together to host it. I just know that it happened. Or evangelistic trainings, we host them, but we don't do them with other churches. So the across the board, the only one city out of the 19 said, we're doing good in evangelism. One of the directors of Crew happens to live there. And so, and he was the one being interviewed. So we're like, okay, generally speaking, all cities are saying we need help in elevating the conversation on evangelism. The kind of second half of the questions we asked were, would you want outside support when it comes to elevating the conversation on evangelism in your city? And if so, what would that look like? Because we understand that from their answers to the first set of questions, a lot of the angst around, okay, this isn't really happening. We know we want it to happen. We're Jesus people. We want people to come to faith. We want to be sharing our faith. But there's this angst that why are we using the same evangelism methods from the 80s and 90s when it's 2019? And in our lifetime, so much disruption has occurred in the last few years, we don't even know how to keep up with the pace of, you know, what is our culture? What impacts our culture? What resonates with our culture? And so a lot of the requests that these pastors and leaders were saying when it came to any type of evangelism support was, would you help us understand our culture? Because we're using these old methods, but they're clearly not sticking with this culture, or the people we're giving these tools to are too afraid to use them in this culture. And so how can you help us have a good cultural commentary about this urban context in which we live? So that was a common theme we were hearing. The other thing was, it's really interesting, we realized that we were kind of living in this evangelism bubble at the Luis Palau Association, because a lot of the resources we heard of and were recommending to them are saying, hey, have you heard of this? Have you heard of Alpha? Have you heard of Explore God? Have you heard of this? A lot of them are saying, no, we haven't heard of this. And these are ministry leaders. And we realized, wow, even though they say, yeah, we would want resources and tools that would fit this specific cultural moment, we realized, wow, there could be much more work done to even elevate the best resources that we know of. And I'm sure you are aware of this too in your organization. And then finally, the people who were saying, the leaders we interviewed were saying, you know, we would welcome an outside voice if they embodied certain characteristics. And a lot of these had to do with, they had to work with the local leaders. They couldn't come in and say, you know, this is the way you need to change it. This is the program. Mm-hmm. They actually, again, in the cultural commentary situation, they're like, we're kind of tired of programs. We're tired of programs. But the reality is, we know programs work if they're couched in relationship, if they understand this is going to be a natural expression. It's such a good program, it doesn't feel like a program. Mm-hmm. Those are the good programs. And so, really, so really. True. And so, no, and I'm sure you know in a church setting too, you're like, okay, that people were like all about it. This people like went on the back burner super quick. There's a difference between those. And so they help us frame good evangelistic paradigms so that when we give resources to our people, they'll actually use them because the heart has been impacted. They know why we're sharing the gospel.
Could I add something
real
quick? Because it very much parallels what you were finding.
Yeah.
Last year, we had a focus of three spiritual disciplines for our church that were kind of our three. Mm-hmm. Prayer, reading the word, and evangelism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the way we went about it was using surveys at multiple times during the year to see if we took ground. Well, needless to say, our people were praying and reading the word a lot more.
Yeah.
And sharing their faith.
Yeah.
But the method we were using through like training classes and stuff like that to try to raise that temperature was really focused around personally sharing with,
yeah,
like what's going out and doing,
yep,
one-on-one.
Yeah.
But it's like, when there's a good outreach thrust, that multiple, you know, types of people within the church feel like they could bring someone to, i.e. a program or an event, it became a lot more unified and embraced. But we didn't go after that. We went after the individual relationship building and then sharing. And those were the ones that we hit that wall. That wall of sharing.
We would the fear wall.
Well, and sometimes it was, we'd get to the spiritual conversation but not know how to, you know, get over the hump to the
invitation.
And we would call it a decision conversation. That we could share even the gospel, but not, would you like to be a follower of Jesus? It was so weird. We'd get right up to the door. But not.
You know, it's interesting. And a thing I would add to that, too, is as we were hearing from leaders, it wasn't just that they're like, okay, trainings are great, but we've realized that, it, and Greg Steer talks about this, too. You train your people. You train your youth, you train your adults. Are they sharing their faith? No. But not only do people, and across these surveys, not only are they asking for resources, they're like, we need to hear what is happening in other cities. Inspire us. Keep us inspired. And that's something that we realize. It's not just training. You need to put the same strategy to making sure that there's a drip of inspiration. And it's real, because a lot of people, especially in our city of Portland, don't think people come to faith here. But during a kind of citywide evangelism training that we did, there were speakers like Greg Steer, Shayla Visser from Alpha, and Mark Middleberg, who talks about contagious Christianity. And interspersed between those talks, local believers who had come to faith in the last year shared their testimony. Really short, Jose Zayas emceed and said, hey, what's your name? You know, what was your life like a year ago? Then what happened? I met Jesus through this Alpha group, through this conversation, through this, you know. And now what's it like? And people are like, wow, like that was the best part of the night. You actually saw the fruit of sharing the gospel. And so these leaders are saying, we want to hear stories of evangelism flourishing in other cities. Because honestly, the Palau Association, we've been great at saying, okay, you know, sharing the Portland story and then giving resources for all these different things. But realize, okay, we actually need to be mining the great stories of evangelism that are happening citywide. Because one, it needs to expand the vision of churches to think about evangelism not as a church-centric activity, but a collaborative thing that can happen over time. And then secondly, it expands their vision that people do come to faith in this city, in this city, in this city, and they can come to faith and are coming to faith in your city. And so those are kind of some of the themes that we recognized. We're actually doing a deep dive into two cities right now, one in our own city of Portland, which for one specific reason, Stephanie can describe, because there was a team that was formed, but also in Seattle. And they have two network leaders who were phenomenal in getting a deeper dive survey out to understand the landscape of evangelism in the Seattle area. And so we're kind of really honing in, okay, what is it going to take to build a sustainable culture of evangelism citywide? Whether they do a Plow Festival or not, that's one thing. But what about, what does it take to build that culture citywide? So you can kind of share what's been happening in Portland.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Before you start, did you have any, you know how the expression, they belong before they believe? You know how that's very, very few people seem to be having, I accepted Jesus on
this moment,
you know, June 20th, 19, or, you know, whatever. Are they finding that that is impacting some of these stories that you're hearing? Because a lot of people are coming into relationship, joining churches that they haven't had a point of belief per se, and come to believe as a result of ongoing relationship and everything. Did that have any bearing?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because when it comes to the evangelism methods that are used in the 80s and 90s, a lot of the times we think about tracts and specific decisions and writing on a card or going up to an altar call. And because so many people that we're talking to these days, when we're having gospel conversations or spiritual conversations, are either de-churched or unchurched, we need to backtrack and not assume that they understand these things and then can come to a decision. And so when it comes to belonging before belief, leaving, we find that programs like Alpha are so effective because they invite people into a conversation. And conversations are ongoing, and that allows you to belong before you believe. And I would just say, the Barna research that they did in connection with Alpha is really interesting, because I think one of the themes it highlights is that Christians these days are actually, they, one, think people don't want to have spiritual conversations, but that's not the case. Okay. They actually just need to embody specific postures like an open-ended conversation. But the interesting detail about Christians these days is that we're really bad at having a conversation. And so it's actually, that's an interesting finding that they found. Christians not only need evangelism training, they need to know how to have conversations with people who don't believe like they do. And so a lot of this does tie into that idea that it is, there is real significance and weight to the belonging before believing. But we also, as a Plow Association, want to say, you know what? There are amazing methods that are super different. Some of them kind of are like not complementary, but they work because of the power of the Holy Spirit, and He does it, and it's awesome. So, but we see, at least for the culture trends in urban context, because that's predominantly where we talk city gospel movements, that kind of conversation is what people are more drawn to, and the leaders of these movements are saying are more receptive to hearing, okay, that's the type of evangelism resource and training we'd want to hear. Yeah.
So, you know, in Portland, kind of coming back to our epiphany and realizing we're not hitting the mark on sharing our faith and evangelism. So Kevin started, and what we call, for lack of a better term, is an evangelism team. Mm-hmm. And just said, okay, who are the people in our city who are lead pastors who have a real heart for evangelism, meaning they are giving the gospel message and in the invitation in their congregations on a regular basis. And so the evangelism team is made up of 6 lead pastors and parachurch organizations, Alpha Crew, InterVarsity, Young Life, and then evangelists like Jose Zayas is on our team. And the whole idea is, you know, it's a bit of a think tank, like, let's throw this on the table and see, because we want to try and do something, right? And our kind of language on our team is elevate the conversation on evangelism, because we know that when we put effort towards something, things change in that category. If I decide today I'm going to go start working out, something will change, right? I'm putting effort into that, and it's going to produce something. And so the idea of like bringing all of these people together who are like-minded, have some commonality in their goals and visions, right? To say, not only what can we do together, but how can we encourage each other? What are you doing so that we can come alongside that effort? Jose did a big event out in Hillsboro. 8,000 people came. All of the people on the evangelism team rallied around that effort and said, hey, let's make sure that we partner with this, right? Lizzie was alluding to an event that we did in conjunction with this evangelism team, again, to help elevate the conversation on evangelism, not only for pastors, but for general lay leaders to come and hear. And I love this statement. A couple years ago, Kevin Harney spoke to a group of pastors. He runs outreach ministry, organic outreach. And he said, you are not encouraging your people to share their faith every 45 days. They will not do it. And that consistency of just remember, and training people to whatever their context, it may just be, you know, like, it was so fascinating, right, of how people are receiving the kind of the old school methods, right, especially when we're talking about Gen Z and millennials. Mm-hmm. And so creating that different culture of context for people to have a conversation, it could look 100 different ways. But however you train someone, it won't matter unless you're constantly keeping this drum going. And so that is kind of the heartbeat around this idea of an evangelism team, just keeping that fire lit in the city. And one of our dreams is that we use this as a model in Portland, and then can say, hey, Detroit, hey, Omaha, hey,
Southern California. These are some things that we have tried and are working. Could we help you do this? Because we know that it is working in our city. But again, it gets back to that idea. If we do not lighter fluid on this conversation, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Can I add to that?
Of course.
And so just kind of when it comes to the evangelism team, it really is locally owned. So there are local leaders who are passionate about evangelism, the pastors, the nonprofit, and marketplace leaders. And they really, at this point, have two goals. They've been around for 2 years. They meet on a quarterly basis, so it is still pretty new. But one is to host an annual gospel outreach. So that was Jose's event. It was, we are going to do a public, unified event to invite people to Jesus. And then the second is like that show and tell event. It's an annual training for pastors, church leaders, nonprofit leaders who want to elevate the conversation on evangelism in their organization, and then local believers. So annual training event, which includes inspiration, and then the annual proclamation event. And when we talk about evangelism teams to other cities, it's a model. Like, at the end of the day, we're not, and in some ways it's a program, like, hey, here's the evangelism team thing. You can do this. But we understand that based on this research, it's not like we can say, you need to form an evangelism team. We can tell our story and say, hey, we recognize that evangelism momentum really waned. This is something that we're doing. We recognize that your goals may look different. You may add something to those two goals. You may totally scratch them and do something different. But we found that at the end of the day, through conversations, as it comes to a citywide culture of sustainable evangelism, there need to be gatekeepers and stakeholders in all of these spaces, pastors, nonprofits, marketplace, who are coming together on a regular basis to share inspiration amongst themselves. Okay, how are people coming to faith? How are you engaging with people? Because we even heard one of the senior pastors, Josh White, who I think you are familiar with, a local pastor here who's spoken at NGA conferences. Oh, perfect. So he is a part of that team, and he's like, honestly, for me, it just keeps the fire alive. For him, as somebody who's already passionate, you know? But again, so it's one way that we really are hypothesizing a culture of sustainable evangelism can take place, but it's not something we're pushing on cities to do, but we're recognizing, wow, we think through conversations of just coaching, consulting, encouraging cities in evangelism, it will probably lead in this direction, but it's our hypothesis right now. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it gets to the heart of everything that we do is, you know, we want to just encourage into the space, mm-hmm. encourage into the space of city movements, encourage into the space of evangelism, however that looks. But again, if we don't, you know, I, because both of you guys kind of mentioned the idea of you know, really seeing the fruit of the efforts, right? And being able to mobilize people in sharing their faith. And it's been really, really fun to watch, like just the transformation of this group of people that feel a sense of vibrancy of being together,
and ownership
that, and then they take that and they took that back to their community. You know, recently we hosted, back in May. Greg Steer and Shayla Visser and Mark Middleberg were, did you attend some of those?
Yeah.
So they were here. We had them for a lunch at the office. And Greg Steer really challenged us with the pastors and evangelists and lay leaders and nonprofits that were at the table. There was no youth. And he's like, where are the youth represented here? And then really challenged us to think about engaging our youth culture in these evangelism conversations. And so Lizzie pulled together a meeting with Keenan from, right, no, who's
Tyler.
At? Tyler is at Rolling Hills. And a bunch of youth pastors from Southwest Portland. And within the matter of 4 or 5 months now, they are working together on doing evangelistic efforts collectively. And you can just feel their energy. Like, there is something different from the first meeting to the second meeting that doubled in size, and they're starting to feel this, like, almost a revival of, oh, yeah, I want people to know Jesus, right? Like, sometimes you have to just kind of go, oh, that's
that's right, that's why I'm doing this. Yeah. It's not so 300 kids will just walk in the door.
Yeah.
It's that 300 kids will accept Christ.
Yeah.
And so that was just yesterday. Then Greg came back and did a training for them. And so, you know, we're testing these models out and proving them out. But it's been really, really thrilling. So
can I just have to... First off, encourage you and affirm you. It's crazy that we are going through at Stonecroft a similar journey.
Mm.
So when I just mentioned, you know, about when the Lord really spoke to us and to me specifically, you know, we started working with InterVarsity.
Yeah.
And we knew we wanted to go from an attractional to a missional, but we really knew that a missional model was important, a relational evangelism. So we started these smaller communities and like Everyday Witness. And so small groups of women that they would not self-identify as an evangelist, but they would identify that we all have a mandate. We were to use Miles' words, a mandate, and that as they come together, then they are learning how to share their faith. And then they're being sent out into where they live, and then they come back in. And so what we found were three characteristics, and they're so similar to you. One, people want to be inspired, and they get inspired by each other's stories.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We do. We get inspired by each other's stories. I remember the first person that I shared the gospel with, and it was my dad. And he came to know the Lord. This was before I ever even identified that I was supposed to be doing that. You know, but I wanted someone else. You know, I wanted someone to experience what I had experienced. And if you've ever, if you've ever shared the gospel with someone and they came to know the Lord, they will always be part of your testimony.
Mm.
Always. You never, ever forget it.
Mm.
And so to be inspired in community by each other, helps you to then to be sent out again, right? And then the second part is equipped. You're equipped to be able to proclaim. People have to be equipped to be able to proclaim. But then the other part is you're sent out, but then you come back into your tribe. And we call that encircled. So inspired to go out.
Yeah, that's good.
Equipped to be able to proclaim. And then encircled in order to be in your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's crazy. I'm listening to you guys, and it's exactly what we are
Isn't
doing.
Isn't that awesome?
God must be up to something.
I know, I wonder, huh?
Yeah.
But it is, it's so fun. This started, and InterVarsity is our coach.
Yeah, that's good.
They, you know, he is, Doug Schopp, I don't know if you know, he's written a couple books from there. And he's the one that's actually coaching some of our volunteers in accountability. So they have an unbeliever that they've befriended, and he's helping them with the spiritual conversations to determine where they're at in their faith journey, if they're a seeker, if, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then what his goal for everybody on this, you know, that he's coaching is that they would share the gospel in the next 60 days with their befriended unbeliever. And it just is kind of this crazy thing, but these... When you do need to be held accountable for it, like what you were saying, have a spiritual conversation every 45 days, you know, and I think once you have that kind of accountability and you get the courage to start a conversation, and you think, it wasn't as bad as what I thought.
And you believe it's possible, like 60 days, oh my gosh, that's like, you know, it's like, no, like it's totally possible. Like it can be natural. You can just share your story, you know, so...
Yeah, I call it fear practice.
Yes, that's a great
you
way
just,
to say it.
The only way you're going to ever know is you just got to try.
Mm-hmm.
And we interviewed a friend of mine in England, and she says, no one ever died of embarrassment, right? Like, we have to move into that space that just says, I'm going to try this. Oh, I survived. They don't think I'm crazy, you know, and I can still, I've had people say to me, I'm like, well, I don't know, that sounds like it's really challenging. I have a faith. I could pray with you, you know, we could ask Jesus what he thinks. She's like, oh, no, I don't even know what to do with that. And I walked away, I'm like, ooh, you know, and, you know, we're still friends. Like, it's fine, you know, we're having more faith conversations, you know, it's just, you have to step into those places.
Yeah.
Let it be weird. If it's not weird, it's not, you know, then you're probably doing something wrong, right? Like, it has to be a little awkward, especially to begin with, but then it just becomes part of who you are. And then,
yeah, right.
You know.
It doesn't need to be an evangelist that does it.
No.
You really need to save it from the pastor in the pulpit or the evangelist that can't help but proclaim it.
Yes. Now, I gave a talk at our church a couple months ago, like, sharing your faith. Why do we make it weird?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. Come on. Here we go. We just got to practice. Practice, practice.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time.
Yep. Yeah.
But
what was the big ending?
The big ending. Well, I know. Well, honestly, if you go to citygospelmovements.org, mm-hmm. you can see the map and see where we're tracking gospel movements.
Mm-hmm.
Please do fill out the survey as well. And we really would love to connect you to local leaders. So if you're traveling to a city and just want to hear what's happening in the city, if you're working in a city, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had additional conversation. Mm-hmm. I think especially after Tyler, it could mm-hmm. make more sense to be like, okay, this worked.
Mm-hmm.
This makes sense mm-hmm. as far as the type of connection.